Reliable coverage of the Patrick Madrid Show, made possible in part by Charity Mobile.
You're doing great, Pat. Just one more hour left, kid.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we are back, and as I promised, I'm going to go to Yvonne in Texas in a minute. We were just talking about her marriage situation, and there's more yet to cover, so we'll do that in just a moment. The number to call to be on the air is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. So Yvonne in Texas, thank you for holding. I appreciate it. And for those who are just tuning in right now, I'll repeat what you told me, and then you tell me if I'm missing anything. So you are very much in love with the man you're married to now. You're civilly married. You're a Catholic. You had been married once before, and the church had given a declaration of nullity, or as people commonly say, an annulment for that first marriage of yours. He, who, as I gather, is not a Catholic, he was also married before, but it was a civil marriage, not a marriage in a church. And we were just you asked me the question, what does your future look like as far as, I'm assuming you mean like, can you be saved? Can you go to heaven? And in the meantime, not getting married in the Catholic Church with your husband, with whom you're civilly married, what implications might that have? Do I have it right?
The only correction is when you say I'm totally in love with him, because I love him, but the romantic spark, marital spark, has diminished. And that's part of the problem. Yeah.
Okay. And I didn't intend to talk about, I didn't intend to suggest sexuality. I just meant that you love him, you're loyal to him, you plan to stay with him.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay, good. Well, so with that in mind, what I wanted to say was that there are some solutions here that I'd like you to consider, but some background first is that I talked about how marriage is a natural institution established by God. It's for all people. Anybody who is eligible to get married, any man and woman who are eligible to get married, can get married, and the church presumes that their marriage is valid. And a valid marriage cannot be annulled. It can't be, you know, you can't separate, or as Jesus said, let what God has put together, let no man put asunder. So this is why we use the words till death do us part, typically in wedding vows that are taken. So the church's presumption is that his first marriage was valid. But in order to find out, there's a bit of due diligence that goes into it. And sometimes it's more involved than others, but the main thing is the church would be looking to find out, was there some situation, impediment, some obstacle that could have prevented the marriage from being valid, even if either party or neither party had no idea that this might be a problem. Sometimes they only surface later. So that's something that he should go through to find out. Now, you may say, but he's not a Catholic. True, that's true. But the church is not looking at this as a Catholic thing per se. Just that you, if you want to remain with him, and we'll come back to that in a moment, you need to know whether or not it's lawful in God's eyes for you to do so. Because remember what Jesus says, if a man divorces his wife and remarries, he commits adultery. And he says this also about women. If a man divorces his wife and marries, or if a woman is divorced and she gets remarried, she commits adultery. So Jesus says this repeatedly. And that's why the church is so careful to say, let's make sure whether or not that first marriage was valid, because if it is valid, then the two parties in the new arrangement are not lawful in living together, because they're actually, or one of them is actually validly married already. So I would encourage you to encourage him to just go through this process and find out. And what that means for you, and how it answers your question, is I would think that you would want to have clarity and to know that the marriage that you're in right now has a future. And I don't mean like many, many, many years into the future. I just mean is this the right thing for you to do as far as your eternal soul is concerned? And if he goes through the annulment process and the church says, your first marriage, referring to his, was not valid, then you and he can know with certitude that you can be married. And you've already told me that you're civilly married, but that's not a valid marriage in the eyes of God, because as a Catholic, one requirement for Catholics, this is not a requirement for anyone else, for atheists mm-hmm. or Protestants or anyone else, but as a Catholic, you have an obligation to get married according to what's called the church's canonical form. And that, it just simply means married in a church and that your marriage is witnessed and blessed by a Catholic bishop, priest, or deacon. And that didn't happen, obviously. So you are, whether you realized it or not, you are living in a state of adultery because as a Catholic, you didn't get married the way Catholics must get married unless they have a dispensation from the bishop. But that can be remedied. And what that means is that your marriage can be convalidated. That's the term that the church uses. So it would be as simple mm-hmm. as the two of you would publicly express the marriage contract again. You would say your wedding vows again, the priest would bless your marriage, and you would be validly married in the eyes of the church, and you can live happily ever after. So that's what I would recommend to you, because otherwise you will live the rest of your life in what is objectively an invalid marriage, and that brings into question, you know, would you go to heaven? And I know you love God, and you want to go to heaven, and you want to do the right thing, so this is the path that you can take that will make it so that you don't have to worry or wonder, because you'll know that you have done what the Lord wants of you, which is to be sure that you're actually married validly to this man whom you love. You see what okay. I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But my original question is, if we live in brother and sister, does not have an effect into
it does.
What I'm living?
It does. It does, but okay. here's it is a little complicated, though. And the fact is, by living as brother and sister, you've eliminated one really big potential problem.
Correct.
So, yeah. But you would still need to go to confession, if you haven't already, for all of the activity in that category that happened in the past, because it was still illicit. Because you were still living, you know, in other words, back when you weren't living as brother and sister,
right?
You would still need to go to confession. You would need to go to confession and bring up the issue okay. of being civilly married, living in this state. But by living as brother and sister, you've eliminated a big problem. But it's not entirely, you're not entirely in the clear, because there's also the question of scandal, okay. you know?
Right. That was my bigger question, because mm-hmm. I've discussed it with my priest and he's aware of it and he's aware of my living situation. He's counseled me, you need to move forward and make the preparations and make what you need to do in order to get married in the church.
I agree with you.
I said, yeah, okay. And I said, yes, I will. But on the other side, like, as I mentioned, we've had marital difficulties up and down, and my heart is just not there. But I'm not going to say I'm divorcing you. I love him, as I said, as my brother. I don't want anything to harm him. He's got physical disabilities that it will hurt him. He's got financial implications that he could not be able to live on his own. Mm-hmm. So taking that into consideration, you know, I care for him enough that I'm going to continue to be married to him. But just my heart is just not there in order to be married in the Catholic Church, because
I've been there, done that before. Yeah, that's what I question. That to me is a puzzle that I don't understand. I mean, if you love him, let me put it this way, Yvonne. Do you love God?
I very much, yes.
Okay. So
center of my life.
Perfect. That's the right answer. So loving your husband is not incompatible with doing the right thing. In other words, you wouldn't be, by having this marriage convalidated by the church, when that time comes, if his marriage, his earlier marriage, is declared null, and the path is clear, and you can have your marriage convalidated, this is what I'm not understanding. What do you mean your heart is not in it? What does that mean exactly?
It's just, you know, marital relations, I have no desire for that anymore.
Yeah, but here's the thing. You don't have to have marital relations.
Correct.
Yeah, so it's not as though when, let's say that glorious day comes and your marriage is convalidated, all the other things are taken care of, your marriage is convalidated with this man you're with now, it doesn't mean that you now are obliged to engage in sexual activity.
Right, yeah.
Is that something you were worried about?
Yes, that too, because as I mentioned, the relationship, the physical relationship and the emotional relationship is not there. And so, and we're gentle to each other, as far as we're civil to each other, mm-hmm. we do care for each other, and we live well, but we've got a lot of difficulties that are in there, that are plagued in there. And so,
Well, I apologize for interrupting, Yvonne, but my point is simply this. Maybe you're laboring under a misconception, thinking that if your marriage is convalidated, that you would then have to live as husband and wife in that way, and you don't.
Yeah.
But here's another thing to consider. I'll leave it at this, because I don't want you to feel like I'm burdening you with too much information. But okay, so as long as we're at it, I would offer you one other thing to consider. Given what you've described, given the fact that he has a presumed valid marriage in the past, I think you should seriously consider moving out. And you can tend to him. You could live nearby. You could live down the street. You know, you can live near enough that you can tend to him in his physical ailments or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you were to do that, all of these other problems vanish. And you can go to confession, as we discussed. You can begin receiving Holy Communion and just resign yourself to the fact that you're not going to be his wife. You're not his wife now. And you won't be his wife, but you can still have this lovely friendship that involves you caring for him. It doesn't involve physical intimacy now anyway. And if it's a difficult situation and you've got problems, then I think maybe as we talk about it more, maybe the very best thing would be that you separate and don't live under the same roof, and poof, all these problems go away. And you can still maintain that kind of relationship, but not live together under the same roof. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It does. It does.
I'm not here to push you. I'm not here to prod you. I'm just here to say, here are what I see as some viable options for you. That looks to me like the best option of all at this point.
I value your opinion, and that's why I wanted your opinion and what you thought. So it's given me a lot to think of, and I'm going to move ahead and forward with these considerations.
Definitely. Okay. I admire you for doing that, Yvonne. And I do appreciate your patience. I realize this was a bit, you know, elongated, but thank you for walking through this with me.
No, I appreciate you and everybody there. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Yvonne. Thank you. I pray that God will bless you and give you the clarity that you're looking for. Let's go to Mary in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hello, Mary.
Yes, good morning. I have a question and just curious what your thoughts are on a video that I saw yesterday. You may or may not have seen it. I don't know.
Okay.
It was of President Biden at a campaign stop in Florida at an abortion rally.
Yeah, I saw
And it. When the woman at the rally introduced him, he was standing off to the side quietly. And at one point, he blesses himself.
Yeah.
And it's a little odd. I just was curious of what to make of it. I mean, I have to say my initial thought was, oh, my goodness, that's odd. That's almost scandalous, the blessing himself at an abortion rally. But my second thought initially was, well, maybe he's confused. He doesn't. It was inadvertent. He doesn't understand what's going on. It was a reflex. Who knows? And then my third, maybe most gracious thought was perhaps he's atoning, you know, forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I don't know. I was just curious if you had, number one, seen it. And I've seen professional athletes bless themselves, you know, like at games and stuff. But to see this done by your president at an abortion rally was quite jarring.
Yeah, I saw it, and I have some thoughts on it. So the snippet that I saw, it's not very long. It only lasts maybe, I don't know, 5-10 seconds at the most. And there's a woman off camera who I presume is either the abortion clinic person or some local dignitary, and she's speaking off camera. She says that that Ron DeSantis felt he needed to run for president. And if you understand the context, she's referring to going from 15 weeks to 6 weeks. She's referring to the ban on abortions and the time frame within which one would legally be able to have an abortion. And so when he makes the sign of the cross, he's just standing there silently, and he has a sort of blank look on his face. This seems to be a bit of a, maybe a kind of a smile or a smirk or something like that. But when she says that and he crosses himself, it's not clear to me whether he's crossing himself like, you know, oh, I'm so glad that Ron DeSantis isn't running for president anymore, or how ridiculous it is that Ron DeSantis was running for president, or heaven help us that they now have to wait 6 weeks for, they can't have an abortion after 6 weeks versus 15 weeks. It's hard to really know what of the things that she says in this video triggered that reaction. But people have asked me, what do you think of it? Well, I think it's terrible. It's disedifying that a Catholic, let's put that in quotation marks,
come on, man,
a Catholic president would make the sign of the cross, which is a sacred sacramental in the Catholic Church, in number one, in that place and in that context, as if he were sort of invoking God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit in some positive way in the issue of abortion. I mean, some people might say that's blasphemous. In a way, it kind of is. I mean, who knows what he intended? It comes across to me as though it was kind of a smart aleck thing. Ha ha, isn't that funny? Making the sign of the cross, like, you know, heaven help us if Ron DeSantis runs for president. He's not running for president anymore. But in others, it's an out of place, seemingly, potentially, possibly blasphemous use of making the sign of the cross as if it were just a joke. But there's no way to really know what was going through his mind when he did that and what it was he was reacting to. I don't know. But I'll just say it's deeply disappointing that a Catholic president would in such a frivolous way and for such a heinous situation, in a heinous situation, supporting abortion as he does, that he would invoke the Blessed Trinity in the middle of all that. I mean, it was dumb to do. Was he really all there? Was he really thinking it through? Was he really calculatingly? Who knows? I have no idea. But that's my opinion of the situation. Very unfortunate, to say the least.
Well, thank you for your thoughts. It just adds on to my concerns about the scandal that he's creating in the church by taking communion. But that's a whole other story.
Yeah, it's a whole other story. It's Jesus said, in this life, there will be scandals, but woe to that man by whom scandal comes. And that's aimed at everybody. I mean, everybody should sit up and pay attention to that. But I don't think it's a stretch to say that Catholics in public life who openly, obstinately promote evil like abortion are creating terrible scandal. And I don't know what else to say, except that it's a terrible thing. I wish you wouldn't do it, but I have no say in the matter. And ultimately, you know what, Mary? I don't take any pleasure in this, because we all have to go through this. We all have to die and be judged. But there is nothing that will escape God's justice. Hopefully, God's mercy will apply, but for those who do not die in the state of grace, they will receive justice. So even though these things are irksome to us now, they will not go unpunished in the case of people who die in the state of mortal sin. And I hope and pray that President Biden dies in the state of mortal grace. May it be many happy years from now, or whenever God calls him. I hope that he goes to heaven. I pray that he goes to heaven. But ultimately, that's up to him. And in the meantime, I wouldn't want those bullet points on the clipboard when it comes time for my exit interview. to have to answer for things like that. So I'll leave it at that. But we are all, I think if nothing else, we should all look at these things and say, you know, what lesson is here for me as a Christian? Are there ways in which maybe I am falling short or you're falling short? So it's a good reminder that we have to be serious about our Catholic faith. I'll leave it at that. We're overdue for a break, but thank you for that. And to all of those of you who asked me on social media about this, that's my thought. I'll be right back.
And what am I doing here?
Thanks to network sponsor PushPay. PushPay offers parishes a platform for tracking donations and sacraments, overseeing schedules, mobile apps to help manage your administrative load, and much more. Info at relevantradio.com/pushpay. That's relevantradio.com/pushpay.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Oh, man, I love my job. I love hanging out with you, that's for sure. I do appreciate your phone calls and your emails. Whether you agree or disagree, thank you for being in touch. 888-914-9149. That number is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Katie in Dalton, Wisconsin. Thank you for waiting and welcome.
Hi.
Yes, hi.
Good morning. I was calling in connection to earlier in the show, you talked about how Saturday vigil masses are a concession, but not like the ideal.
Right.
I live in an area where we have a pastorate. So we have six church buildings with three priests working as a team. And one of our buildings, the one closest to me, now only has Saturday night masses, and they don't even have confession prior to mass because the priest is rushing from one Saturday vigil to the next.
Okay.
And my family chooses to drive half an hour to Sunday morning mass most weeks, but there's a lot of the local elderly women and men who that's not an option. And it's been a concern and struggle for me. Like, you know, what do we do? Like, we're losing the access to the sacrament of confession. It's harder to get to your sacrament of the Holy Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's frustrating. Like,
yeah.
And I guess it's, you know, when it's the only option, Saturday night, one, how sad, but what do you do? What do you say?
Yeah, I'm wondering, so this is part of a restructuring in that area, right? As far as parishes either closing or merging, is that what this is from?
Yes, unfortunately. And they always keep saying we're not closing any of the church buildings, but it's hard to believe that.
Yeah, I can imagine. And, you know, it's just not an easy situation for Catholic folk to go through. So I feel your pain, as somebody once said. But there are some workarounds. So is your question specifically about the propriety of going only to Saturday evening masses, or am I missing the point of your question?
I guess, yeah, that was a big part of it because you said it's not the ideal. You shouldn't just always go to Saturday night and make that what your, you know, like what your schedule is.
But here's the thing though, there, for some people, that's the only
even
option.
Confession even. Yeah.
So let's dwell on the mass part for a moment here. So if I didn't say it before, I would like to clarify it now. The ideal and the goal is to keep holy the Lord's Day. So that's Sunday. And you understand that. I know you understand.
Yeah.
That. But by way of concession, the church added the way to fulfill one's Sunday obligation by going to the vigil mass on Saturday evening. And that's what I meant by it was a concession, and it didn't exist prior to Vatican II, at least not to my knowledge. You could have, there were vigils, of course, for feast days and things like that, but as a matter of fulfilling one's Sunday obligation, Catholics didn't have that option. So the church offered it as a concession, and it's a good thing. And when you need to take advantage of it, I think it's a good thing. It's a fine thing. Some people, for reasons due to their jobs or whatever the other, and here, like a parish situation where you can't go to a Sunday mass, perhaps, Well, then there's nothing wrong with going to the vigil mass on Saturday evening. What I was referring to more, Katie, was people who have the option. They could go to Sunday mass, but, and I've even known some people, you know, quite frankly, for whom going to mass on Saturday evening was their way to check that box off so they could have the whole Sunday free to do what they wanted to do. And I remember even talking to some of them, you know, a couple of people that I knew, you know, why don't you ever go to mass on Sunday? Well, because, you know, we want to have the whole day free. We want to sleep in. We want to do this and though, or thus and so. And if we can get mass in on Saturday night, then we know we've got all day Saturday free to do what we want. In other words, they were missing the point of what it means to keep holy the Lord's Day. And so it was kind of a minimalism involved. What's the very least I have to do in order to be okay and make my Sunday obligation? So that's what I'm saying. For those people for whom they can easily go to mass on Sunday, but they only go Saturday nights, it's kind of like missing the point of why the church gives us that concession. And if I didn't make that clear earlier, I'm sorry, but hopefully it's a little clearer now.
Okay.
Now, what about confession?
Just a little bit. Yeah, I was going to say just like, you know, an additional add-on is, it's just been driving me insane because there's no confession prior to mass. So if you've fallen into mortal sin, mm-hmm. you can't even go to mass that weekend and receive the Holy Eucharist, you know.
Right. You could go to mass, but you're right.
Worthily, you like not Eucharist. Worthily, right. You know, and yes, there are 5 other buildings and you can drive over to any of them and get to confession. Like it is accessible.
Right. Right.
But it's not as easily accessible.
Right.
And like I said, our community, there's people who don't drive, can't drive. So what then? You have to admit to someone, please drive me to confession. So, you know, like mm-hmm. it takes away some of the anonymity and, you know, being anonymous and
right.
of going privately confessing. And
yeah, I understand like what you mean.
Something our priests need to reevaluate.
Fair enough. So, the thing I want to say is that there are situations where it's beyond your control and you're not committing a sin if you can't control it. You can't get there. Sometimes these things happen and you do the best you can under the circumstances. Obviously, there's always the option to drive. I mean, I just looked up Dalton on the map. It looks like it's kind of out in the middle of farm country, but you've got the Wisconsin Dells half an hour away. You've got Fond du Lac further away, but that's about 45 miles away. I don't know how big a town Columbus, Wisconsin is, Portage, Wisconsin. I mean, there are other what mm-hmm. look to be maybe some more sizable towns. So one way to handle it would be to say, well, we're going to make the sacrifice. We're going to get in the car and we're going to drive a little further and mm-hmm. get to confession. And sometimes that's the only thing you can do if you're in a difficult mm-hmm. situation. You just go that extra mile. And that way, you won't feel the feelings you have right now, like, well, I'm frustrated and I can't get to confession. And what if I need to go to confession, but I can't? And then I'm going to mass, but I can't receive communion. I understand how you would feel. I understand why you would feel that way. But that could be a way to conquer the problem by saying, well, we're just going to drive an extra half hour or an extra 20 minutes, mm-hmm. and we will go to a place where we can do these things. It's not ideal, but it certainly can be done.
Right. And that's what my family has done, but I just know that the parish in general, this is a frustration we've all been struggling with.
Yeah, and I totally understand. It's hard when parishes merge or when you have one priest who's like circuit riding for three, four, five parishes. It's hard for everybody involved. And that's one reason why it's all of our responsibility to try to promote vocations to the priesthood so that in due time, this problem will become less and less, please God. So we do the best we can.
Okay.
I hope that's helpful, Katie. I want to validate what you're saying because I understand it's difficult.
And I struggle because I want to approach the priests about it, but I'm also afraid I'll come off as aggressive or rude unintentionally.
Well, I know what that's like too. Well, maybe as you ponder this, and you, like Our Lady, we're told in the Bible, she pondered all of these things in her heart. Maybe as time goes by, the right words will come to you, and you can be less likely to be, you know, angry or. I understand where you're coming from. I really do. So,
right.
I would just encourage you. Hang in there. You're welcome. Nice chatting with you. 888-914-9149. How about Bill now in Tampa? Good morning. We've had a couple Tampa area calls. Welcome, Bill.
Thank you. Patrick, I think going to Mass on Sunday is wonderful, but I don't think it being compulsory is good. Allow me to explain why I feel that way.
Okay.
When you have that compulsory that you must attend Mass every Sunday, it becomes a routine matter. And rather than something that you can go and really get close to Christ and feel his presence and everything. And this shadow of hanging over your head that it's a sin if you miss Mass on Sunday, I don't get that, Patrick. I can only imagine on the final interview, I'm being told that I missed Mass on March 25th to send down to hell. I just don't get that. And also, I feel like one of the most dangerous places in the world is the exit parking lot of a Catholic church after Mass. And it's because a lot of people go because they have that terrible guilt on their mind that if they miss this Mass, they're going straight to hell. And those are my feelings.
Okay. Would you like me to comment on that?
I would sure appreciate it.
Okay, yeah. So as for the parking lot situation, I will acknowledge that there are Catholics who, sadly, they go up and receive communion, and then they boogie out the door as fast as they can because they want to get back to the game, or they want to get to the donut shop, or they want to be out of the parking lot before the traffic jam starts. Who knows what their reasons are? But what a really kind of pathetic thing, unless you have a baby, unless you're like an OBGYN doctor and you've got to get to the hospital because there's a baby that you have to deliver, that's different. But if you just want to get out, that's not a good reason. And sadly, there are a lot of Catholics who don't even stay for the final blessing. Makes me wonder if they even know why they're there. But in any case, you're right. There are people who got to zoom out of the parking lot, and we all have to be careful. But I wouldn't worry about that so much as I would say, what is the issue at stake here in missing Mass on Sunday? What is the Sunday obligation for? I would liken it, Bill, to a family where mom and dad say, okay, we all are going to have a family dinner at 6 p.m., whatever day of the week it may be. This is our family time together. This is our opportunity to get to know each other better and interact and be family and love each other and have a meal together. Now, that's a mundane comparison because the Mass is far more important than a family meal because the Mass is the holy sacrifice of Jesus and what he did for you and for me by his death on the cross. So we are made present in a mystical sense at the Last Supper and at Calvary and in the heavenly sanctuary where Jesus, our eternal high priest, is offering himself as a perfect victim, as a perfect priest, for our salvation. So your salvation hinges, your eternal salvation, your happiness with God forever in heaven, hinges upon what Jesus did for you. And when you think about what he did, Bill, imagine the pain and the trauma and the blood loss and the shock and the agony and the excruciating sufferings that the Lord Jesus Christ went through for you personally, your sins. And for one of us to say, yeah, okay, but I've got other things I'd like to do on Sunday, Lord. Yeah, I know you suffered a lot for me and you know, all that other stuff. That's pretty cool. Thank you for that. But I've got other things I need to do on Sunday. I think if you consider by way of perspective what Jesus did for you and then your own response to say, yeah, but not really all that interested, Jesus. You know, I don't want it to become a routine thing. I think it's the wrong way of looking at it. It's like looking through a telescope from the wrong end. You're not going to see things correctly. Rather, what the Catholic Church says is, you know what? We're a family. Jesus died on the cross for us, and he gave us his own body, blood, soul, and divinity under the appearances of bread and wine in the Holy Eucharist. And he tells us that we are to consume his flesh and drink his blood in the Holy Eucharist. And he says, if you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you will have life within you. If you don't eat my flesh and don't drink my blood, you will not have life within you. So the Lord desires that we should come together. He doesn't give us a strict timetable. He doesn't say, do this daily, do this every Sunday, do this once a month, do this once a year. But you know what he did do, Bill? He entrusted that decision to his church. In Luke 10:16, he says to the apostles, he who listens to you listens to me. He who rejects you rejects me. And he who rejects me rejects the one who sent me. So Jesus entrusted the church with the authority to do things like bind and loose. And the church rightfully, properly, says to us, we are bound by a Sunday obligation to gather for just an hour to go to Mass and praise God and worship him in spirit and in truth and to fulfill what Jesus commanded of us. And so personally, I think it's a wonderful thing, absolutely wonderful, that the church requires just 1 hour per week to thank the Lord for what he did for me and for you. So that's what I mean by looking through the telescope at the wrong end. Because if you're just thinking, well, you know, how do I feel about this? Is it just routine for me? Who cares if it's routine for you? Who cares? The Lord is calling you to the banquet of life, to ponder and pray and think about what he has done for you. It's not really a matter of what you think or don't think, or is it rote or routine, or is it boring or whatever. None of those things really matter when you realize why we go to Mass together on Sunday and why the church has a right to call us to Mass together on Sunday. Now, I've said a lot. You probably disagree with everything I've said, Bill, but that's my take on your question. What do you think?
May I comment? Patrick, I get what you're saying completely. I love the Lord with all my heart and soul, and I love going to Mass. But I'm just saying that when it's compulsory, it's like almost like your wife saying, Patrick, you must love me, period. And of course you love your wife, but when she tells you you must love her, it takes on a whole different meaning. I would rather love my wife because it's kind of like letting a bird go and let him fly. If they love you, they'll come back. I don't know. It's kind of a stupid equation, but
no, I get it. But remember what Jesus said. He said, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. So he's saying to you and to me, do you really love me? Okay, if you really love me, then keep my commandments. And one of his commandments is to listen to the church. And the church says, hey, everybody, Mass on Sunday. Unless you can't make it, that's different. But if you can make it, go ahead, Bill.
There's a bishop in Denmark that even said that, I can't remember his name, I wish I had, he said that Mass attendance on Sunday is not absolutely compulsory. And I wish I'd got his name, but...
Yeah, I get it. And I mean, my flippant reaction, Bill, I hope you don't mind a little flippancy from me, but I mean, Jimmy Crack Cornyn, I don't care what a bishop in Denmark has to say on this issue. The universal church, the Catholic Church, going back to the time of the apostles, said, go to Mass on Sunday. If you can't make it, okay, that's fine. But if you can make it, go to Mass on Sunday. And that's good. And we need that. And just like a speed limit, it's compulsory not to drive over the speed limit. Doesn't mean that people don't do it, but it leads to accidents and death and injury. It's a good thing to have certain things as compulsory, because if they weren't compulsory, most people wouldn't do it to their detriment.
Yeah, I get it. Well, you've been very kind to give me your comments, and I appreciate it. I've taken up too much of your time.
No, I'm glad you called, Bill. I really am. I am glad you called.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's talk again soon. Hey, time's almost gone, but we're going to burn through as many calls as possible right after this. This hour is supported by Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Join the nation's largest Catholic-oriented credit union and receive $200 when you add a direct deposit. Learn more at NotreDameFCU.com/join. That's NotreDameFCU.com/join.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
I have a note here that came in a moment ago from Dwayne. Hey, Dwayne, shout out to you. He's in Youngstown, Ohio. And he says, stop trying to translate the Bible. Everything you say is lies. We know who the true Jew is. You do not know the Bible. I think he meant to say Yahweh, but he wrote it out as Yahweh is not sent to everyone, only to the house of Israel. And the Sabbath is on Saturday. There are a lot of quotation or a lot of exclamation points in this. How y'all trying to change the Most High words? He said, do not change y'all from the synagogue of Satan. Okay. Thanks for listening. At least they're listening, Cyrus.
And you did say earlier, thank you for the emails that agree and also for the ones that disagree.
Would you interpret this email as disagreeing with me?
That's definitely going in that pile, yes.
Okay, okay. And that's from Dwayne. Shout out, Jane. Shout out, Dwayne.
Dwayne.
I appreciate Dwayne, yes. It's a good name. Thank you. Let's go to Jose in Miami. Hi, Jose.
Hi, Patrick. Patrick, I have a question. My question is about prayer intentions.
Okay.
The priest does his prayer intention for the year, and it's a monthly intention. And when at the end of the liturgy or the word, the priest pays among the other intentions, among the other prayers, he prays for the prayers, the Pope's intentions. Would it be wrong for me to do a prayer intention like? My prayers in writing and put them in a certain category, and when I pray, because I have a lot of prayers during the day, and I could just refer to their intention like the Pope, kind of like the Pope's intentions.
When you're at Mass and the priest is or the lector or whoever, the deacon, whoever is doing the prayers of the faithful, the different petitions, are you asking if you were to have your own set of petitions that you silently ask as well? Is that what you mean?
Correct. Like write them down. Give an example. I write them down on a booklet, and I pray, and my prayers when I pray, I refer to that booklet. And then
sure.
And yeah. All those. Is that legal? Is that? Ethical? And because I see I when I talk to people, they have problems, and I tell them, I'll pray for you, and I know their problems, so I write them down, and then I pray them.
That's
I
good.
Do the prayers, but that's. During the day, you know, that's a long time of praying. And instead of doing that, I could just write the prayers that for a specific person.
Yeah.
I put it in a booklet and keep them there. Can I refer to that booklet? And if that can be done,
yeah.
Can you explain more how I could get it, the easiest way to get it done?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like that? I mean, there's no certain way to do it. Just do it. If I do it that way, that will be legal. Correct?
Yeah. I mean, there's no matter of legal or illegal. It's a beautiful, good thing that you're praying for all these intentions. So more power to you. And no legal or illegal way to do that. You're just remembering to pray for these people. That's great. So yes, the answer is yes.
Okay. Thank you. When I said legal, what I meant to say was that proper. It's not.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, certainly proper. God is pleased that you're interceding on behalf of these other people in any case. And if you need to jot it down, I'll give you a quick example. So I have on my phone a note. You know, you have the note app on your phone. I have an RIP, rest in peace list of people that I've known, family and friends over the years who have died. Now, when I first started this list years ago, it was just a few names. And now it's quite long and getting longer. And although I don't necessarily pray by name for all these many people, when I pray for all the people on that list, God understands, and those prayers are efficacious. So thanks for the question, Jose. I appreciate that. Pray for me too, please. Add me to your list of intentions. I'd appreciate that. How about Miriam in Los Angeles? Good morning, Miriam.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to.
Hi. So my question to you this morning, I would like to get your actually comment. been in a 5-year marriage. It's been a rocky marriage, to say the least. But so I was raised Christian. That's all I've known until like 5 months when I accidentally, honestly, turned on the radio and I came across Relevant Radio, and I can't stop. You know, every day, me and my daughters listen to you guys.
Awesome.
So my question is this. My husband was raised Catholic, but at this point, again, it's been a rocky relationship. This point, he's actually abandoned the home. Like, it's not the first time.
How long have you been married?
5 years. 5 years.
And how old are the two of you?
I'm 36. He's 2 years older than me, about to be 38 this year.
Okay.
I'm so nervous. I was raised Christian. He's one who was raised Catholic. They didn't really attend mass or anything like that from my understanding. But at this point, I'm trying to understand his view of things. My point of view is divorce is never the answer. Never has it crossed my mind, but at this point, it's just like, when is enough enough? So at this point, I just, obviously, I've gone to church, and obviously, again.
How would you summarize the question for me? I just want to make sure we have time.
Okay, will I be sinning if I file for divorce, even though that's not what I want to do? I love my partner, but it's just, how do you force someone to be with you? Will I be sinning if I file?
Yeah, you would be. So divorce in itself, we're told in the Bible, God hates divorce. And the Catholic Church says that divorce is an evil that we should always avoid. So strictly speaking, yes, that would be a sin if you were to implode the marriage, even though things are difficult. And I'm really sorry that they are. Let's take a slightly different example, Miriam. Let's say that your husband were beating you, or he was carrying on with another woman, or doing drugs, or something, you know, really harmful and terrible in the marriage.
Yeah.
You have the right to what the church calls a canonical separation. Now, I realize you're not Catholic, but he is. So this would apply in your case in any case. So a canonical separation means that he would have forfeited his right to live with you as husband and wife under the same roof. But that's not a divorce. You would separate from each other, but you would still, you know, acknowledge and recognize your marriage, even though you weren't living together. And the idea behind it would be that there would be some improvement so that you could restore the marriage and come back together again and live together as husband and wife. And that does happen. But divorce would be to, in essence, walk away from what, you know, walk away from your marriage. Now, there are some complicating factors here. So were you and your husband married in the Catholic Church?
No, we were not. It was just a, like, civil wedding, not even a Christian church or anything.
Got it. So is it like in front of a justice of the peace at the courthouse or something? Okay. So that's what I meant by a complicating factor. And this actually would militate in the direction that you would be, you could, under some circumstances, look to get out of this marriage, because the Catholic Party is obliged to get married in the church and have the presence of a Catholic bishop, priest, or deacon to bless the marriage and witness it. That didn't happen. So as far as this is concerned, because your husband's a Catholic and he failed to do that, the church would say that you're living in an invalid marriage. So although I'm not here to try to break people up or to, you know, in any way encourage you to end a marriage, if the church were to go through the declaration, through the annulment process, I'm guessing it would very quickly determine that this was an invalid marriage. And if it's an invalid marriage, then getting a civil divorce would be appropriate in this case, because you weren't actually married in reality. Now, I'm not talking about the civil law. I'm talking about God's law. So in that situation, if he's abandoned you and you know, talk to a pastor at a local Catholic church and explain the situation, and he can help you get this process going so that you could exit an invalid marriage and then pursue marriage with somebody else. I'll have to leave it at that, though, if you don't mind, just for the reasons of time. But talk to your local Catholic pastor about that, and I have a feeling he's going to give you the same advice. Thank you. Let's go to Thomas in Providence, Rhode Island. Good morning, Thomas.
Hey, Patrick, real quick. What did you find redeeming about Tombstone? I watched it after you said it was a good movie, and I just wanted to hear your thoughts.
Sure. There are a number of things. Number one, it's an actual historical event, as you know. So it's an interesting rendition of something that really happened. I like it for the manly virtues that are exhibited, for courage in the face of overwhelming odds, of standing up for what is right, of defending innocent people, stopping those who are evildoers. I mean, there are a lot of really... really, oh boy, we lost our time. I'm sorry about that, Thomas. I would have loved to talk to you more about it. Maybe call me again and we can talk when there's more time. But yeah, I think there are a lot of good lessons on virtue. Not everybody in that movie was very virtuous, that's true. But a lot of the lessons are good. I'll leave it at that. Thank you. Until tomorrow,
I'll
pray for you. Please pray for me. Isn't that a daisy?